welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Mayday Show. And we are definitely doing Mayday today because it's May 1st, and the crap that's out there right now, as we predicted, where everybody wants to sell their vaccines and scare people doing it. How's Steve Barish, the sidekick number two, doing?
Doing pretty good tonight, Fred. Doing real good.
Yeah, it's tonight we're going to go right directly to the topic, which is the false scare of the swine flu, which we'd already predicted. I guess you probably don't have your computer where you can see on Skype yet, right?
No, my computer is not working right. I have it up for sale, so hopefully I can buy a PC instead of the Apple. I've had nothing but trouble with this Apple.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to tell you, I have my official Lockheed Skunk Works hat on tonight from the old Skunk Works day. I also have one of my shoulder patches, which I'm going to put on my flight jacket.
Wow.
Yeah, from Skunk Works. This was the name actually started back before I worked there. I'm holding this up. That's the official patch. When one of the workers there was into Little Abner's, I think it was Little Abner's or somebody's cartoon, where they had the Skunk Works, S-K-O-N-K Works,
mm-hmm.
out Lockheed, back when they were building the U-2.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, one of the engineers, I've got all the details in my book, he answered, Skunk Works. And so as a result, the Skunk Works got its name. And in those days, what had happened is that Clarence Johnson had was taking these old crates. You know, they were out at the Burbank. I spent many a day in that plant. That was the old Burbank plant. And they were taking these crates. He took all these engine crates from the old World War II bomber Hudson that they made. Mm-hmm. And he constructed a wall, and the wall became the wall of the Skunk Works. And then he got a circus tent for the roof. Now, this is indoors, but they wanted this classified area, you know, back in the 40s. Mm-hmm. Actually, early 50s, and that began. The next door was a plastic plant. Actually, did fiberglassing. So you smell this fiberglass resin in this place, and so it became the Skunk Works. And Lockheed went on to get a trademark on the name, which they have currently, and they have products that you can go Skunk Works. You know, you can type it in on the internet, and you can get your decals and stuff. And I hadn't had my hat in years, so I got my hat back, and I got me a patch. There it is. I'm going to put on my flight jacket. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, that's wild. I saw your flight jacket when I was in California. That's the real McCoy.
Yeah, the real deal. It's got the presidential seal on it.
Yeah, that's really incredible.
So anyway, what do you think of fake crap that's going on out there right now?
I think Mr. Rumsfeld's going to make a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to jump. I'm going to just jump into this right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a little bit of reading. You're going to have to bear with me. I'm just trying to see. I'm going to skip around. I don't expect to read this chapter of the book. But I'm just going to skip through a little bit. All right?
Sure.
In this chapter, we are going to examine some very old historical and health and consciousness lessons that probably most of us were never aware of, or if so, forgotten. The government and the government affiliate research agencies have done their due diligence in how to manipulate population control, psychological fear for control of the masses, eradicate the older part of our population as to relieve the money debt to our society as they encourage age-ridden problems, present disinformation along the topics of advanced education, extraterrestrial involvement, governmental affairs, and finally programming our children in a destructive way as to impede our constitutional freedoms of future generations. There's a tremendous movement of underground activity exposing the contents of the information I'm presenting in this book. The Internet is a great source of digging into all types of subject matter. However, some of it is not true, and part of the disinformation campaigns are to attack conspiracy theorists and spread a blanket of ignorance over what is a conspiracy and what a conspiracy theory is. Because I lived right through a good portion of what's out there, I am presenting the overall picture of what I saw and see today. And I hope this provides a valuable insight to the readers of my own personal quest for truth. As I mentioned earlier, I spent a lot of time with the, and this is earlier in the book than on the show tonight, as I mentioned earlier, I spent a lot of time with the National Health Federation. We had two full-time lobbyists in Congress. One is still a dear friend of mine, Clinton Miller, who worked very hard to allow Americans to make freedom of health choices and to include freedom to keep and protect their children from these horrible vaccines that we are about to cover momentarily. Mm-hmm. Since then, another movement doing exactly opposite of what we stood for, Codex Amentarius, another Tavistock Institute ploy, is doing exactly the opposite of what we stood for. Codex Amentarius has begun to try and pass many laws taking away all our freedom of choice freedoms, health choice freedoms. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, Rima E. LeBeau, MD, and her husband, former Army General Albert E. Stubblebine, founder of the Army's Remote Viewing Program, has begun an active crusade against the assault and blah, blah, blah. Now, let's turn and look at the history of some of this stuff. I'm paraphrasing it now. All infection is a race between the invading microbes in the host. The microbe, following the indelible rules of evolution, strives to reproduce and survive. Meanwhile, the host immune system mounts a warlike defense to find, destroy, and eliminate it. If the agent kills its host too quickly, then it can be... If the agent kills its host too quickly, then it cannot be spread. This was found out when the government distributed its evil Ebola virus in Zaire, South Africa in 1976. I used to lecture on that one. Mm-hmm. Germs, viruses, and bacteria, which can be reproduced and pass from one host to another, are favored in population control. Prevalence of the disease is the number of diseased individuals in any one point where prevalence over a given period prevalence. The incidence is the number of new cases of a disease that can occur within a defined population established over time. Example would be cases per 100,000 as a given population. Any excessive unrelated incidence of a particular disease above what is normally expected in a population is defined to be an epidemic. When an epidemic extends beyond the confines of a wide area, typically a continent, it becomes more of a widespread problem. It's called a pandemic. So in other words, once it gets out of your country, I'll get into that in a minute. Any disease with too low to moderate normal base level incidence rate in the population, but rather not necessarily consistent, is said to be an endemic. In other words, like common colds. Mm-hmm. Individuals are, this is the clarification from the World Health Organization, so you know that. Okay. Individuals who are infected and shown either no or only mild symptoms are said to have subclinical infection. Subclinically infected individuals with no symptoms argued that by as well as carriers of the disease because they are carrying and frequently shedding disease agent. Once an individual is infected, there is an incubation period. That's the time between exposure and the first detectable symptom. Latency period, time when the disease is concealed, hidden or inactive, and infectious. During time during which disease can be transmitted with or without contact. And then I have all the different common source epidemic diseases, anthrax, botulism, brucellosis, cholera, giardiasis, hepatitis,
right.
Typhoid fever, diphtheria, blah, 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 meningococcal meningitis, all listed here in these charts, which I'm not going to go through. And then I go into, in the past, well, we're going on time, I've got to pace myself because we want to discuss this too. In the past, there were two major infectious diseases which developed into epidemics. Common source from host to host. Common source epidemics arise from the contaminated source such as water or food. Mm-hmm. Because we have a world of supermarkets today, it's quite easy to spread consciousness destructive severe depression causing chemicals into entire societies. A few examples are arsenics that are used in tomatoes to kill the large green worms that often are seen on the plants. Most people know arsenic is a very good, undetectable, slow-killing poison. Bromine is a common use on strawberries and attacks the lungs. Of course, that's within in chemtrails. Mm-hmm. Synthetic vitamin poisoning occurs when you substitute or add synthetic vitamins to natural food substances, which is half the stuff at the supermarket, especially dairy. And then, for example, adding vitamin A and D, usually in a synthetic form, to dairy products lowers the frequency of the immune system, vitamin A, which leads towards heart and bone problems, vitamin D. The reason this happens is because when you place a natural vitamin next to a synthetic vitamin, the synthetic vitamin absorbs the life force from the natural vitamin. Okay, so.
No.
I'm just skipping through now. Anything causing a disease is called a pathogen. Antigens are building blocks for pathogens. And that's one thing, see, when a person has a weak immune system and we put a aquamarine nuclear receptor on them, that's to get rid of the antigens before they, actually the pathogens, before they become pathogens, which then, of course, they're sick. And I started out with a brief history of plagues, and I go through Moses, and I'm not going to go through that because that can be read in the book. What I'm going to do is jump to and make a comment that all these different plagues didn't kill hardly, you know, even the bubonic plague, the black death in Crimea when it broke out the second time, only killed 25,000 people, okay, which is considered huge. Okay, now, in 1918, 1919, the Spanish flu swept the world, killing between 20 and 40 million people. This was not a bacterial-related pandemic, but a viral pandemic. Most of its victims were healthy young adults, in contrast to most influenza outbreaks, so predominantly affect juvenile, elderly, and otherwise weakened patients. The pandemic lasted from March 1918 to June 1920, spreading even to the Antarctic and remote Pacific islands. The disease was first observed at Fort Riley, home of General George Custer in the 7th Cavalry, Texas, United States, on March 4th, 1918, and Queens, New York, on March 11th, 1918. The disease killed 600,000 people in the United States and over 20 to 50,000 people worldwide. The Spanish flu was the first and most severe of the three pandemics of influenza of the 1900s. Okay, now that's obvious. Well, this becomes obvious in a minute. Less severe pandemics occurred in 1957, the Asian flu, and in 1968, Hong Kong flu. In 1976, a novel virus was identified at Fort Dix, Burlington County, New Jersey, home of the largest U.S. federal prison called the swine flu. It, however, although feared to be a strain of the Spanish flu, never left Fort Dix. They were able to contain it, and they didn't want to get it out for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after writing this chapter, I found it necessary to revisit this part. If you remember back in 2005 and 2006, Donald Rumsfeld and company pushed the news media as hard as they could by creating an avian flu scare.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems just a few days ago, around the middle of April 2009, our little bioweapon buddies went down to Veracruz, Mexico on April 12, 2009 and released a newest designer virus designed at Fort Dix back in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
You remember, Fort Dix is the largest federal corrections institute that loves to do bio experiments. Republican Ron Paul, a medical doctor by trade, commented that this definitely must have been a man-made virus. Mexico is a logical place to start a classic false pandemic. As recently, there have been border disputes, drug running disputes, and other issues between the United States and Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Flashing back to October, you got to look at the politics first. Flashing back to October 21st, 2005, a deputy of the ultra-nationalist liberal democratic faction of the Russian state of Duma, Alseki Mitrofanov, said in a parliamentary speech in the Kremlin that a bird flu was invented by the Americans who wanted to dominate the world's poultry markets. The idea of a pandemic among humans is something from science fiction. Spanish agricultural minister Elena Espinosa said on a private radio station in Cadena Sur, as Europe embraced for the further spread of H5N1 strain of the fake bird flu, Dr. Mark Siegel, a practicing internist and associate professor medicine of the University of New York School of Medicine, also stated that if anything is contagious right now, it's a judgment clouded by fear. So why are we going back where we were 4 years ago? When we look at the way the creeping fascism works, If our population control doesn't work today, let's try the same game again tomorrow. Same different facts, different rules. Same rules, different facts, make-believe facts. In fascism, there's always a financial gain for someone, as well as a control. Well, number one would be the board of directors of the Tamiflu manufacturer, starting with Vujic, J.R. Den Vink, board of directors of Hoffman LaRoche, he's a Bilderberger member, George Shultz, board of directors Gilead, Bilderberg member, Donald Rumsfeld, former chairman of Gilead, creator, by the way, of the Tamiflu vaccine, from 1997 and 2001, and owns at least $5 million worth of stock, which in April alone has jumped from $35 to $47 a share from the scare. If you want to research this quickly, the NASDAQ name for Gilead is GILD, G-I-L-D. Simply go to the Internet and look at the stocks since 1992 in the present, and then paste in the fake scares, which I did today. So what would be the possible logical next step? Obviously, martial law for those who fail to comply with a mandatory vaccination request. This has already been anticipated. A good example is a detention center located in Marion County, Indianapolis, Indiana. Formerly an Amtrak rail car repair facility has been fenced in, large furnaces installed with 3 to 4 inch gas mains, a crematoria size, helicopter landing pads, existing railway with railheads for prisoners, including red, blue, and green zones for classifying and processing incoming personnel, one-way turnstiles, barracks, towers, high fences with razor wire pointed to keep people in. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, has long been the SS of the United States. I have personally sold products to people that manage FEMA. Back in the 1980s, I had predicted that they would be a force to be reckoned with, and in the future, when I found out in 1979 they had run black ops projects on downtown Los Angeles under the guise of a Russian nuclear briefcase bomb. Over the years, I have had several contacts with the organization. As a result, there are between 600 and 800 prisons in the United States, all fully operational and ready to receive prisoners. They are all staffed and surrounded by full-time guards, but most of them are empty, with the exception of a few illegal immigrants being held and a few terrorists here and there. To initiate a strong martial law, all that is necessary is a presidential signature on a proclamation and the attorney general's signature on a warrant to which the list of names will be attached. Some of the programs are as follows. The Rex 84 program was established for a mass exodus of illegal aliens crossing the Mexican-U.S. border, where they would be quickly rounded up and placed in FEMA detention centers. Operation Garden Plot is a program to control the population. That's what we're doing now. Operation Cable Splicer is a program for an orderly takeover of state and local governments by the federal government. FEMA is the executive arm of the coming police state and thus will be head up operations. As you can see, that behind the virus scares, there already exists a control program.
Yeah.
And then it just goes on. I mean, I just wanted to lay that little bit of wisdom out there so that people could understand that they are. If you look at the stocks at Gilead, the stocks in 1992 were nothing. And in 2005 and 6, when they did the Avion scare, they bounced up like they almost doubled. And now they're going up again because of what they're doing. And so you can see how this country operates, and people all around the world are not believing in it, and more people get killed by the vaccine than the flu itself.
Yep.
So what are you seeing on your end?
Well, I think a lot of it's coming out of Fort Dix, to be honest with you. I think it's the same thing that happens over and over and over again, and people are frightened to death. And it's the same thing that happens over and over again. It's just Rumsfeld's going to get very, very wealthy again on the stuff that he's making. And it's poison. I mean, it's just it's one thing right after another. You know, you raise so much fear that people get lost. They get confused. They get lost. They really, really get lost. And that's what they're doing.
Yeah, the average person who doesn't know anything will go down and get a Tamiflu shot. Now, the next thing that happens with a Tamiflu shot is that you have put yourself, the mercury is one of the minor things. They're talking about mercury as a preservative. Well, they don't really use, they use titanium dioxide for a preservative. Mm-hmm. They don't even have mercury in it. But it's just as bad because it's non-organic. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is it's got cyclohexane in it. Cyclohexane is a drug that gradually turns the brain frequencies to a certain level that these MISTI and KH-11 satellites, KH-12 and whatever the number they've got up there now, can now tune in, and they do these mental mind impressions. This is another chapter in my book. They can read your brain now, and they can actually program your thoughts. And they do that quite frequently. You know, they do it to certain people to cause them to, commit crimes so they can legislate constitutional freedoms away. They do it to certain people cause them to become depressed so they can sell antidepressants and SSRI drugs. Mm-hmm. And it just goes on and on. These guys are brilliant. I mean, it's a brilliant negative plan. Rather than save the planet, make abundance for all, this is the way these people think. This is the way they've been thinking for a long time. And I think finally people are waking up. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of buzz on the internet now, and I think finally what will happen is the world will wake up and we will be able to do something about this. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I hope so. I hope that we'll be able to wake up enough people that they'll be able to see what's really going on.
And, yeah, what are your clients? How are your clients taking all this? Are you explaining it all to them?
Yes, I explain my clients what's going on the best of my ability, and they agree with me. As a matter of fact, I was having dinner with my with some friends tonight, and they were telling me the same thing. They said this stuff's coming out of Fort Dix. Rumsfeld's up to it and to his ears. They all know it's on the internet. It's not anything hidden anymore. It's actually
out. I know, and I don't think that I don't think the people that plan all this stuff really were planning. The people are starting to get wise now. There's a lot of computers out there. Although there are some people that still will be dumb enough to go down and get these forced upon them vaccines. And like I say, as I said a few weeks ago, in Japan, if you're under 19, you can't have it because the children become suicidal and homicidal. Well, and that's it's because when you put angel dust in a young person's brain, or marijuana for that manner, and the brain isn't developed yet, it causes permanent damage.
Yes.
I personally think that part of the work ethic in this country has gone to hell because kids were smoking pot that are now, you know, through high school, through grade school, and now they're, you know, in their 20s and 25, you know, early 20s. And even going into their later 20s, of that generation, and they can't function. Mm-hmm. They don't have a work ethic anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's my feeling.
Yes. Yes. I think it's
working
it's
with
really
my newest co-host here, who's a sidekick, and he's still a little young and energetic. So he decided to sit on the back of my chair. He's supposed to be sitting on me, but he's not. Get over here, little sidekick. We have to put him back up in his backup perch.
Hello.
Hi.
I think somebody's
I don't know if we have a call in or not.
Yes.
If you guys anybody wants to
he's already talking about the swine flu, and that's what I wanted to ask him about.
What do you want to ask about? Who's calling in now? What's your name?
Mardia.
Oh, Mardia, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
I thought you were going to be showing up for work down here.
Real soon.
Are you coming down soon?
Yes.
Oh, good. Yeah, you need to give us a call. Don't announce it on the air, but give us a call to your new phone number because we tried your cell phone number and it didn't work.
Oh, I gave Seth another number.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
So anyhow, what's your question?
What was about the swine flu, but you just got through speaking about it.
Okay, what about it? What was your question about it, though, is what I'm saying?
Oh, about the immunizations and about the seriousness of it.
Well, it's not any more serious, you know, than anything else. It's a genetically engineered virus. It's called the word is zoonist when they jump species, but it's never actually viruses don't jump from the animal kingdom to the human kingdom. unless an animal has rabies and it bites you. That way you get a reaction. But no pig has ever made a person sick, nor has any bird. But what they do is they created the AIDS virus. The AIDS virus was created from the blending of the sheep Vishnu and the cattle bovine virus. And this was done not by us, but it was originally done in 1934, 1935 during Hitler's time. And when they did the Operation Paperclip, this knowledge came over here and was given to our biologists in the U.S. Army. How do I know? Because I worked for the U.S. Army in the biology department for a short time. I learned a lot of things back in the early 50s, the mid-50s. So they did the same thing here. They created this in a laboratory. As a matter of fact, I don't know if I put it in my book. I don't think I did, but I actually have the process of how to, in the laboratory, take an animal virus and crossbreed it into the human genetic region. It's not that hard to do. Not some occult thing that certain scientists can do. About anybody can do it today with the technology that we have. So what they do is they take a swine, you know, a virus that affects pigs. In this case, the virus that, I don't know, I forget the name of the virus that affects pigs. It's not called the swine flu. It's got a name. And it causes pigs to have bronchial problems. And then what happens is they mix it with human genealogy so that it will, on a protein level, to keep it simple, its protein levels, which would now be considered a bad protein or an antigen, will match the protein absorption levels of the human body, and therefore that becomes the bridge to transfer over the pig virus, which gives flu-like symptoms of upper respiratory problems. So then when a human gets it, it's a pretty strong dose because it's not a natural seasonal virus, which has a lower frequency of intensity in the human DNA. It's a stronger, more genetically, it's got like built-in speed to really get going. And so its gestation period is much shorter and its intensity is much greater. And what happens is people end up dying of a respiratory problem, pneumonia. So it eventually kills people by creating pneumonia. That's wow. That's the way it works. That's what they die from.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. It's not a it's not an ingenious thing in today's biology at all. This could be learned in probably first year college chemistry, biochemistry, how to do this. And actually it could be learned in high school chemistry if the guy, you know, the guy or the girl would focus. Most kids can't focus in high school anymore.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's how it works.
All right.
The thing about the nuclear receptor is that it runs the immune system at a higher frequency, and even though you might come in contact with it, chances are you won't come down with it because it'll take it apart on a molecular level before it can actually get into your system. Yeah. It needs to get into your system and create a couple of steps. And what happens is with any virus, the virus itself isn't a danger. It's the virus taking over your cells and directing the cells to host and multiply more viruses.
Mm-hmm.
And what Tamiflu is supposed to do, it's supposed to put a shell around the cells in your body. That's why it has the name that it does. It's supposed to, because it's working on that part of the cell, the osteosomovar. And what happens is when it puts a shell over the cell, the virus can't penetrate another cell to get inside of it.
Mm.
But what it does is it puts a shell over the cell, but it also traps the cyclohexane inside, which goes to your brain and your neuronic structure, your neurons, your brain neurons. So therefore it actually sealing death. It's sealing death into your system, but it will prevent a flu. It will stop it, or it will create it. A lot of times, as we said earlier, because this is such an experimental, I can even give you, if you want, I even in my book list a company that provides the raw material for the for it, and you can go, there's 19 different additives to Tamiflu. You can get the direct stuff yourself if you want to play with it.
and get high on it, because you can get high on the stuff. If you take the other 19 things that they have in there out, and I can list those right now. I got them in my book. If you take those out, it becomes, you know, it's sort of like a drug, you know. It's kind of like you get high off of it. And a lot of people that take it report getting high off of it. They like it because it's a pill. It's like ecstasy to them because of the cyclohexane reaction. So that's they made it very tasteful, and they made it very, it's like the same guy that made ecstasy. You know, people love that stuff. It's just a nice form of speed that kind of mocked up a mushroom versus the crystal methods out there that just eat you alive, you know. So as a result, people on ecstasy could function, you know, and last a lot longer. Eventually it would bring their demise, rather than people that do speed, and they get completely destroys their lives, their teeth, and everything else. So it's just getting to know the old biochemistry. You know, that ain't all that complicated. And that, and what I do in the book is I put the formulas, I simplify them, so that you can take your time, go on the internet, type in that, the numbers on the formula. There'd be an H number, CO number, carbon number. You know, there'd be two or three, you know, letters and a couple of numbers. You type those in, and at your leisure, you can learn all about it and become your own biochemist.
Mm-hmm.
So in the book, I teach people how to learn how to do all this, and so they can learn and do it to themselves. I mean, they'll learn what's going on. Because people have, the only defense against this is education and knowledge and wisdom. That's the only defense there is against what we're dealing with now.
Mm.
It's so easy. I mean, think about it. The average person doesn't have the background that we have, the three of us on the phone here or on the air. They don't have that background. So when they got kids, and they don't know what to do. You know, their kids are in school. The school tells them, oh, if you don't do the inoculations, they're going to throw you out of school. And they freak out, they inoculate the kids, and the kids are going to be screwed up for life, which is population control. And then they go after the parents. And the parents oftentimes don't want the kids to bring something home. So therefore, that's another reason to get the kids done up, you know?
Yeah. Isn't there
the roads and everybody's... Yeah.
Isn't there a way that children don't have to get that? Is it a religious thing that they can sign in school so they don't have to get that shot?
In some states, in Hawaii, Len Horowitz, when he moved over there, he's a great crusader of all this, one of my good friends, he had a big fight with the Hawaiian system. They kicked his kids out of school, and he almost got thrown in jail.
Wow.
In Hawaii, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He finally beat it, but he fought it, I think, for a year or two. He actually wrote a book about it. I forget the name of the book. So it depends on the school, the area. But when you got federally funded state budgets for education, the school's going to put up a hell of a fight because the feds are going to say, we're going to cut your funding if you don't inoculate the kids.
Yeah.
Now, who's
the
one that provides that? Well, of course, that's Rumsfeld, who's our 14th and 21st, defense minister, you'd call him, you know.
Yeah.
And so on. And remember, he's the one that hired that guy over, I forget his name, over at the FDA. It's in my book, back on his first term, and got the other FDA people to accept aspartame, which is a cancer producer. It's one of the higher cancer-producing things along with radiation there is.
Wow.
And that became the birthplace of Nutrisweet, which he made. You know, Rumsfeld, people don't realize it. He goes all the way back to Reagan and beyond, actually President Ford. He's a heavy player. He took over the Pentagon back in Ford's time. So when George Bush was in there, you know, Iraqi war, no problem. He told the Pentagon what to do, when to do it. You know, finally he was probably going to expose, because of his huge drug ties with these drug companies, it threatened to expose what they were really doing in the Bush administration, and he had to leave.
Mm-hmm.
He got too hot, you know what I mean? Too hot to handle.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was the chairman of the board of several drug companies, and he's a consultant, and a lot of these drug czars just, you know, love him. They think he's God because he's done these huge, you know, programs. I got a big kick of going back to 2005 and 2006, watching him try to push the Avion, you know, and we really put a big protest up on that one at BBS Radio and my shows. And other people did, too. And that's when Alex Jones was just getting his feet wet in this stuff. Mm-hmm. I was immersed in it for 20 years before that, so we knew how to fight it. We fought mm-hmm. it pretty good, and people gradually, listened and didn't go for the Tamiflu thing at that time. Tamiflu wasn't invented that long ago, and as soon as it was done, then it was licensed out to La Roche and Hoffman LaRoche and all these different companies at Merck that sell it. And then there's Repovar or whatever it is. It's the other version of it. It's the same thing, though, same chemicals. Mm-hmm. I've looked at both of them. Tamiflu I was very familiar with. Mm-hmm. The Somavar, its chemical name comes from the name of the part of your cell that it's working on.
Huh.
Pretty cool, huh?
That is wild. They have it right down to a science.
Oh, they've got it down to a science. The disinformation is dialed in. There's not a piece of it that's not correctly put in place. And that's the way fascism works. It just, they couldn't pull it off a few 4 years ago, but now they're pulling it off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they launched in Zaire in 76 when they launched the Ebola down there.
Yeah.
Looked like another, it looked like something else, but Ebola was a problem because it killed too quick. Literally what Ebola does is it causes your blood to thin and it falls out of your skin.
Yep, yep.
And so how can you spread that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. People die in the one village, and the next village, they don't, it never gets there. And then the virus dies.
Yeah, yeah.
So they dialed in this one. I don't know what, I haven't seen the chemistry of it. They call it H1N1. So that tells us the protein arrangement of it. But, the enzymes, but I would call it a classification of subproteins
mm-hmm.
that are in there that would look like peptides through a microscope.
Mm-hmm.
These elements that they're working with are not all that complicated if you know anything about chemistry.
Yeah.
But anyhow, Steve, what have you been doing all week anyway?
I'm working with something new right now. I've been using the projector, and what I've been doing is that a couple people, a lot of the people actually in town here in Rochester are going back to eating red meat. And we're finding out that the ground here, the nutrients are almost gone.
Oh, yeah, that's true in most places.
So a lot of the energy workers are going back to red meat. And I had a gentleman in my place, I was massaging him, I'm doing energy work with him, and for some odd reason, from the projector itself, I could feel something happening within me, and what was happening is that I was building an enzyme from me to him that had to do with red meat. Because he was eating red meat, which he hadn't in about 30 years, and he was having a lot of trouble.
He'll get sick and die.
And what happened was, before he left, he felt a lot better. So I think the projector has something to do, I'm not saying with everything, but it did help me with the enzyme.
To put
in this man's body. So I think there's a lot going on, Fred, that maybe we don't know about, or maybe you know about and I don't. But the enzyme was definitely from the projector, because I could feel the building in the projector coming from the projector going into me and coming into him. So evidently something is happening with enzymes that the projector... it's with the platinum one. I don't have a gold one or a silver one that I can test it with to see if that would work. But I know that with the platinum one, it is working. So... I think bigger, major things are going to be happening with the projector.
Yeah, let me tell you a little story.
Yes, please.
I've had two employees that I was able to save their lives one of them finally left on me, but I gave him two more years. That was Steve, who did our assembly work, and he had cancer, and he was terminally ill when I met him. He only had days to live, but we put him on a crash program, and we got 2 years out of him, and he had lung cancer. We got 100% remission once, and then he started smoking again.
Right.
We got him off a cigarette. We got a second remission, you know, by x-ray and the hospital and everything I was, you know, working with through him. Finally, you know, the third time around, he just couldn't get off cigarettes, so he died of a heart attack due to cancer in the lungs.
Right,
but
right.
We had him alive for two more glorious years.
Gotcha.
So his brother-in-law, who does all my handyman work around here, he works for me pretty much full-time. His brother-in-law was, I'd met him while he was, bringing Steve to work and stuff down in Laguna. Now he's working for me out here in the country, but his brother-in-law was overweight, and I saw him bring up a bunch of meat sandwiches one day, and I looked at him, and I was watching how he behaved, and I said, you know what? I said, you know, you've got to get off this meat immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I would be afraid to take your blood pressure right now, and I'd hate to see your cholesterol levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you need to check yourself into a clinic right now, not tomorrow.
Right.
He did. His cholesterol was through the roof.
Wow.
His blood pressure was way up there. It was like 180, 190 over 120.
Wow, that's awfully high.
No, while he was in the clinic that I had sent him to, he had a heart attack.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, right there. Now, what if he hadn't been in the clinic? What if he hadn't even gone?
Yeah.
He'd died.
Yeah.
Luckily, he was in the clinic, and he had a mild heart attack, and they were able to, get him immediately on a blood thinner right there in the clinic, IV, right on the spot, and saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately after that, he had to take blood thinners. He stopped eating meat. He started eating better things. He told me the next day or 2 days later when he got out of the hospital, put him in the hospital for 2 days.
Okay.
Observation. He said, you know, if you don't change your ways and drop your cholesterol, you're not going to be around. You're going to have another heart attack. There's nothing we can do about it. A bypass ain't going to help you any.
Right.
Because your whole arterial system is going to be screwed. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so he went ahead and got on their program. We reduced the blood thinners with proper diet and exercise. He's lost 30 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last 3 or 4 months. Well, about a week ago, or about 2 weeks ago, he thought he'd be cute. He was off meat. But people don't realize that once you've been off meat for 3 or 4 or 5 weeks, you know, what it is, it's corpse. Meat is corpse. You know, that's what Hitler called it, corpse eaters.
Yeah.
So what happened was he ate a big sausage. He went to the store. He had a great bit. He bought a 2 or 3 pound Polish sausage.
Wow.
Yeah, I call it a relapse. Ate the whole thing over the weekend.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know where he was Monday morning? Back in the hospital.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and he's out. He lost the 2 weeks of work. He's now back being a vegetarian. But once you go down that road and you start the road to recovery, you may feel that you crave meat and you may need it, but you don't. What happens is on those kind of detoxes, which are detoxes of your whole life, you start craving things that you're getting rid of. And so people, that's what's happening to your people. They're craving meat because they've probably been off of it 6 months, and they're now, after 6 months, their body is doing a deep cleansing of the arterial system. The arteries, because it takes that long for natural chelation to get going.
Right.
And what's happening is they're starting to crave things that their body's eliminating.
Okay.
That's what happens. And they'll end up getting really screwed up if they continue.
Yeah. I'll have to talk to them.
Yeah, you need to talk to them, that's for sure. Or you won't be around that long.
No, that's for sure.
And how old is he?
About 83.
Yeah, see, at that age... How long was he off meat?
I think about 30 years, Fred.
Yeah. He'll kill himself. He'll die of a heart attack.
Boy. I'll talk to him about it. I'll certainly talk to him about it.
You're real thin or what?
Yeah, he's a pretty thin guy. He doesn't drink water. You know, he gets all his water from his vegetables and fruits and the spinach and everything else. And I try to talk to him. I said, look, you've got to drink water. So
yeah,
rather than drink water,
drink
he went back to red meat. It's crazy.
Was he drinking any red wine with it?
That I don't know, Fred.
That'll give him a few more months. It'll thin his blood down, but he won't be around much longer.
Mm.
He has a subconscious death wish if he's back on meat, and at that age, he's been off at 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's as predictable as the weather when the clouds form and the water starts coming down. It's obviously raining.
Right. I'll certainly talk to him. He'll be in, not this week, but next week. I'll certainly have a talk with him.
So what about your other clients?
The other clients, I've only got one other person that went back to red meat, and I'm trying to talk her off of red meat, so I'm trying the best I can. And some of the other energy workers in town, from what I understand, from what I'm being told, is that the ground is actually depleted of a lot of the minerals.
Well, that's been true for years. That's trace minerals. That happened during the dust storms back in Oklahoma, Texas, in the panhandle down there back in the 30s.
Right.
When they did, they didn't understand what contour farming was on hillsides, and all the topsoil washed off when they were plowing straight rows.
Yeah.
And then the winds came and blew it away. That's why we have to have our Pirlo with our trace minerals in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a great seller because it has all the trace minerals that comes from a red clay that's only 2,000 years old
from an Indian reservation.
The Indians use it, and it gets rid of arthritis and all kinds of things. I mean, if you have arthritis, use our trace mineral and take yucca, and it's gone.
Well, I use it every day.
Every day. Otherwise, you're going to be debilitated, and you're going to have these great big swollen-looking legs and arms and stuff, which is ridiculous.
I use those. I take the vitamins every day. And, and my drink, you know, the drink that we always drink. But, you know, and I feel better with it, Fred.
Yeah.
I feel better. I get tired doing a massage or something, and I'll sit down and I'll have a drink, and, it feels really good.
Yeah.
It's very green. It's got good stuff in it.
Yeah. Really. Well, anyhow, you know, we're running out of time. That was a quick show, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was very interesting. That was very.
Well, I want you and everybody out there listening. We've got a heck of a lot of listeners and watchers now. Try to get out there and spread the word. Just don't get near Tamiflu. Let's bankrupt the drug companies by non-participation.
Yep.
And you can do great things with wheat sprouts and bean sprouts. I get up in the morning. I like to have a fry up some bean sprouts. A lot better than frying up a bunch of cholesterol products.
Yeah,
you know?
That's for sure. That's for sure.
I like bean sprouts and onions with olive oil, salt, and pepper, and you can't have a better breakfast than that.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I'll occasionally have a hard-boiled egg, but that's, you know, I don't recommend eggs to anybody, but my big advice is I eat hard-boiled eggs occasionally, you know, and a little bit of cheese. My daughters, of course, were here, and they stocked up on cheese, and so... Yeah, I'm cleaning it out now by eating it because I'm addicted to it, but I never buy it.
Right,
I can't control it. It's one of my vices, you know, is cheese.
Are your daughters still there, Fred?
Oh, no, they're back in England. They got back
this
morning.
Oh, they are back in England. Cool.
One of them's coming over to go and work for Paradigm, hopefully, in a couple weeks or a month.
Wonderful.
And I didn't write on my book for about 5 days, but now I'm back to my book, and everything's cool.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so what are you doing this week coming up?
I'm going to start doing some new energy work, Fred, that entails the projector. I want to see what else I can come up with the projector with.
Good.
And so I'll let you know next week. But I've been doing some work with it, and I can't get the diamonds to fire. I don't know why. With the gold projector, I got it to fire in the right-hand move, you know, clockwise. And I can't get this to fire, and I don't understand. Maybe it's the power of the projector.
Anyhow, we're running out of time.
Okay.
Go ahead and tell everybody what your show is tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah.
We got about 30
my show will be on.
Here.
It's the Steve Barish Healing Hour. It'll be on.
And announce your show to the world here.
Right. It'll come on at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. It's called the Steve Barish Healing Hour. Please tune in. We'll talk more about Paradigm and a lot more about the projector.
All right. You've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. It's been fun. We hope we got some insight out across to you about what's going on politically and chemically. My website is paradigm.com. Our call-in number is 1-800-729-2603. And the book we are reading from tonight is called The Inside Track. See you next week. Tomorrow night, our show at 9 o'clock. I've got my little show tomorrow night, which is an educational pre-tape show. Good night. Thank you. Thank you.